You want to talk eclipse with me? We had something here with 2017. I think you figured out the date on it. I vaguely remember that. I thought that was kind of neat. There was one when I was in school that I also vaguely remember. So to be 100% and have it right in your backyard, it was pretty cool.
It's one in Spain in 2 years.
Yeah.
So if you want to see another.
I'm not going to go out of my way.
I wouldn't travel. But it's really cool to have it right away.
It's a really cool once-in-a-lifetime experience, and I'm happy with that.
And for context, we're in Elmore, and it was in Elmore. We had nearly 3 minutes or so.
It might have been four-ish and some change. It felt like a long time. It was odd just how cold it got. And then to see the street lights and everything turn on.
The most fascinating thing for me was to be able to look around 360 and see what looked like a sunset.
Yeah.
The entire way around. I really like that.
That was off-putting.
Yeah. I thought I would see like birds, you know, land and stuff, but I actually didn't see that. So, but I guess I may not have fully noticed because I'm not looking at birds necessarily. But I had heard.
Really heard much on the bird. I saw them as we were leaving Totality. The birds flying. Mm-hmm. There were some big birds. It was almost like they were like, "Hey, I got to go to bed." Apparently, I completely lost track of time.
It's funny to see.
And then it's daytime. And it's like dawn. And you're like, okay, yeah. Let's get back at it.
It was funny to see a full airplane going over with a banner, too.
Did we ever figure out what this banner said?
No, it was backwards, too, for us. So
somebody, it was hard to see. Somebody was trying to post it, and I don't know if they were trying to mess with somebody else.
I don't know. I kind of thought it was just somebody who was trying to, like, ride the eclipse, you know, to get longer exposure to it, but
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
But what the...
You'd have to be going pretty quick, too, I bet. And you'd probably only get a few more minutes. So
yeah. And then somebody in our town set off fireworks.
Yeah, which was actually pretty sweet to see.
It was genius.
Because you can see the firework fully.
Yeah.
Very cool.
It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, yeah. And you can see firework. I actually liked that. I thought that was a cool idea. We were really worried. I do think there was a little bit of overcast to it, but I would say it didn't hurt it at all.
Yeah, a few, was that cirrus clouds, the really high ones that are really thin?
It didn't seem to make a difference. It felt, and it was weird. It felt like when Totality happened in that time range, it felt very clear. But then it also is like, as the light came out, you're like, oh, there's those high level clouds. Cause I was kind of nervous about that. Yeah. Like, oh, this is a bummer. But whatever.
I mean, if it's very thick clouds, you know, you can't really see it, but it still gets dark. So like the experience might be kind of cool, but. We didn't even have that problem. So
no,
I heard a lot of people had that problem in Texas, which was supposed to be the clearer area.
It was. It was.
Yeah. Funny that people had to redirect flights and stuff to, you know, oh, I got to go to Indiana instead or whatever.
I had a friend that was on one of those eclipse flights. His wife went on it. And I haven't caught up with either of them yet.
Yeah, I'd be curious.
I'm curious to see what that experience was like.
Cool stuff, though, overall. I liked it. It was worth it. I mean, I say worth it, but
it was literally,
we took off an hour and walked down the street. So it was cool. I liked it.
Yeah, it was fun. You want to do a podcast?
Yeah, I guess we could probably do that.
We should do a podcast. Yeah. Let's see. Oh, yeah. It's time for the podcast that eclipses all other podcasts.
Ooh, hey-o.
It's the Lighthouse IT Solutions Podcast, joined with me, as always, the ever-lovable Griffin. I'm the routinely often lovable Matt, and I don't know,
it's just like a thing and stuff.
Like, this is like, I'm going to try to be Valley Girl, and if you are offended by it, I'm not really that concerned, because you're going to be in the Valley, and this is the Midwest, yo.
Yo. The classic thing people in Midwest say.
This is classic Midwestern language.
Well, we got a bunch to talk about. A lot of it's kind of in the air, but we'll see time, too.
Is that an eclipse joke?
Ooh.
Is that a callback?
Might be.
You got jokes?
Yeah, I totally meant to say that as a joke.
Well, since you've got jokes today, why don't you kick us off?
Well, the big news I've got is the fact that Alphabet, parent company of Google, is looking to buy HubSpot. The $32 billion whatever the heck.
I don't even
know what they call themselves now. Marketing tech, probably?
Yeah, MarTech? I think it's MarTech.
Oh, MarTech
is
the...
Yeah, and they probably invented it. I think this is huge news.
Yeah, so they've they're considering a bid. Nothing's final, and that's kind of why we're going to not spend a ton of time here. But it's a big deal if it happens. It'd be the biggest acquisition Google's ever made, first off.
Which is crazy. Which because nuts. they've bought companies like Nest and things like that. Yeah. That have like, yeah, and this is literally just a CRM and marketing system.
But this is, you know, main competitor to things like Salesforce.
And if I had to pick between the two, I'd pick Odoo.
Yeah. If you watch the next episode, maybe. I shouldn't call out an episode. I don't know when it's going to air. So next episode, question mark? Maybe. Yeah, so huge thing there, man. That would make it so that Google can properly compete with things like Salesforce and, you know, Microsoft, for example.
Microsoft has Dynamics. Yeah. They've had a CRM for a while.
For a long time, yeah.
Salesforce, kind of the big piece. But the alternative has always been HubSpot. And at one point in time, Lighthouse was a HubSpot partner.
Yeah, big HubSpot proponent. Still, you know, I see the massive, you know, pros to it. It's just we've found a few other things that work better in our space. So,
and that's really what it is. This HubSpot is a great product. We left the partnership just simply because they were growing and they were focusing on a client base that didn't include ours. And sometimes, sometimes that happens in our industry. You know, we get on board real early and they start off targeting clients that they really want. They want all clients. A lot of software companies, they'll do a lot of pieces. And then they sort of get a taste of what it is that they want. And, you know, they start going after Salesforce kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think it's a great platform. It's a great product, especially if you are willing to spend the dollars and cents that they want you to.
It is a pricey software, but I've often mentioned that it's more of like a Cadillac product.
Yeah.
It's taken away a few features, I think, to make that happen. But I'm sure Cadillac has too. So.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out if Salesforce was owned by anybody. They're their own thing. For some reason, I thought it was Oracle, but
I thought Salesforce was owned by Oracle.
Apparently, it was actually just a former executive who started Salesforce.
Oh.
So, former executive of Oracle started Salesforce. That's the connection. Salesforce, it seems to be its own.
It's its own monster, huh?
Its own monster, yep.
Interestingly enough, though, just kind of looking at it, they own Slack and Heroku.
Really?
Which are some big names in developers' lives.
Salesforce owns Slack.
Subsidiaries own Slack Technologies.
That's
and Heroku and a company called Quip.
Slack is like user friendly though, and Salesforce is not.
You ain't wrong.
That's
there.
Weird.
You're not wrong.
Confusing.
And it is kind of interesting because there is some tension there, starting with the European market. It's now made it worldwide, but Slack was using antitrust rules to come at Teams.
Oh.
Because Microsoft bundles it with 365. I can't believe they won this.
Interesting.
But they said they used their stance to give away the software. So now you can actually, they're going to never look away from Microsoft to not benefit and profit from a situation where they can blame it on the government.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Apple. So new plans are going to no longer include Teams, and Teams is going to be a separate product. And so they're going to make the product plan that used to include Teams cheaper, but the cost is actually going to work out that it's going to be like $1.50 more a month.
Oh.
To include Teams.
Thanks, Slack.
Yeah. So actually what happened was they made it so the companies that were already onboarded into this environment.
Yeah, now need to pay.
Now have to pay more because they pressed for antitrust. And Microsoft could set the cost about the same price as what Slack is and say, look, you could pay this for Slack or you can pay this for us. So now.
Either way, they're getting undercut. Yeah.
Well played. Well played. You showed your hand, Microsoft wins, and now it costs me an extra couple bucks a month.
Yeah.
Not really messing with previous plans, and we're not sure what exactly was going to happen. But yeah, especially in the EU, antitrust prevails, and so now consumers will have to pay more money to get Teams.
There's some interesting similarities to this next story with this US versus Apple thing.
Well, because they had some stuff with like USB-C, and the European Union kind of made it so that we all have to buy brand new adapters.
Well, there's this idea that the government's claiming that Apple has a monopoly on the App Store and it has complete control of, you know, whatever apps are allowed on there.
It's true.
And that iPhones and whatnot. You know, this all stifles competition. So,
which it does.
Yeah, but Apple's arguing that their focus on user experience justifies their control and all this, and it's like, come on.
Yeah, because then what they do is if they see a program that really has a great idea, they incorporate it into the operating system.
Yeah.
Look at there's a journal app that, what's the name? I think we talked about it
on the mental health
day one
thing. Yeah.
Day one, I think, is the name of the journal. They basically include it for free. It's part of it was a really cool and unique journaling system. And actually, uniquely, the Apple Journal can provide you prompts with what places you've been and, you know, exercise goals or what. It can take data that is reserved for the deepest recesses of the operating system and expose those to provide you with prompts in which other developers are not allowed to have due to security concerns.
Yep.
That sounds like stifling competition.
Yep. The whole thing is, sure, Apple's well within its legal rights or whatever, but, you know, it's harming the developer community.
They're right to have an app store, but I do think there should be the ability to sideload.
Yeah.
That should be an at my own risk.
This is, again, something that we don't know the outcome of, but...
Yeah.
The other thing the government's doing, though, which is kind of weird, is this TikTok ban, which I don't think I'll get into, like, the actual government side, because this is not really the political side podcast of things, but it is the business side, and a lot of people are concerned about if this is going to hurt their business, do I need to swap a whole bunch of effort into, you know, other platforms, things like that, but we're really just finding that it's only affecting small businesses because larger businesses are obviously either going to be on these other platforms already as well as TikTok.
Yeah, they're aggregating their content.
Yeah, or they have the bigger team where they can just make the change within a month or a week or something like that anyways. But these small businesses are just going to get hurt if they've kind of gone in all on TikTok, which admittedly, some of the offers that some of the features that TikTok has allows small businesses to kind of flourish if they can get viral. So... that's kind of wild, I guess, a lot of people have gotten on there. YouTube Shorts, Instagram Reels, things like that. They don't have quite the same level. There's no shop on Instagram Reels. You know, there's no shop on YouTube, things like that. But TikTok shop exists. So
I have an odd question for you, put you right on the spot. But you ever have YouTube ask you survey questions?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I got asked one, and I always hit skip. But it said, which of these services would you define as not being social media? And TikTok was on there. And had I actually cared to fill this survey in, I kind of felt like they said like Instagram, they said Snapchat, they said...
and TikTok.
And they put TikTok on there. And my gut said, is TikTok actually still considered social media? Some of these surveys feel like they're slighted to get you to go to vote a certain way. That's why I generally skip them because it's like, whatever. But I did think that was an interesting... that question was interesting. They really wanted to see if people view TikTok. It was an obvious one of, like, they wanted you to pick that.
Yeah. I mean, it's the whole, like, everything app thing. Again, we're just seeing TikTok explode into a bunch of other things that are a little bit more than social media.
Well, and what's the difference between sort of, like, how TikTok and YouTube operate? It's very consumption-based.
Oh, yeah.
I guess that question was funny to me because I'm like, you're very clearly... wanting me to tell you TikTok, yeah, but I've never, if you asked me social media platforms, I probably would name that. But the reality is, and we've even discussed it, that its percentage of content creators is significantly lower than other platforms.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's a lot harder to, like, you know, Twitter, you can just write something, but TikTok, you have to record a video. So half
yeah.
the time...
and in order to mean anything, it's very consumptive. People get on TikTok to consume, not to contribute.
Yeah. That's an interesting point, though, because there's more effort to post a video on TikTok than there is to, you know, write text on Threads or something like that. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing right now is, for the first time, a slow growth rate that they have. They're still growing a little bit, but they're significantly less than, like, even just last year. And it's suggesting that they're attracting less new users, which makes sense. But also that the theory is these users are just simply aging out. So they had... a market of, you know, let's say Gen Z, because it probably is. And
yeah, but there's people my age and stuff
but
that,
like,
are,
you know,
obsessed with
overall.
It too. Yeah, but
these people are becoming adults and just have less time, and that, you know, they can't spend, you know, 8 hours a day on TikTok anymore. So
or should it?
Yeah, and maybe that's part of it. I don't know, but
I know I kind of interrupted you a little bit there, but it was just, it was, as you were describing this, it's like when we're talking about TikTok and the competitors coming in, I thought about that. I'm like, do I even see them as a social media platform? And I honestly see them as much a social media platform as YouTube is. It's basically a comment section.
I'm of the idea that LinkedIn is going to be growing immensely soon.
Really?
So LinkedIn has just introduced a vertical video feed as well. So that's direct TikTok competitor at the moment, weirdly, to LinkedIn. Strange. And also, both Twitter and Facebook have pretty well given up the idea that I'm going to start, like, I'm going to be a news platform at this point. A lot of their moderation stuff's gone. They're really just stopping.
But LinkedIn has always been more of a business platform.
But LinkedIn's trying. The next initiative for LinkedIn is to try to be more news focused.
I'm so, okay with it. I would say,
because it's a professional network.
For me, I probably spend equal amount of time because my professional network, I like to know what's going on. It's very much informative of people that I am connected with and follow and finding out what's going on. And I see more professional, and it's easier to get that content than it is to get on Facebook. I feel like Facebook is all based upon, you know, honestly, I don't feel like the content is for me. I feel like it has got an ulterior motive.
Yeah, Facebook now is just for those local groups, really, and then the market. Funny enough, that's a lot of what
I get a ton of marketplace,
younger people.
But the LinkedIn stuff gives me a lot of information. I would say I would browse Reddit's subreddits, but the way the algorithm's working now, from a news standpoint, and finding out what's going on with companies I care about, I'm getting more information from LinkedIn.
Yeah. And it seems a little bit more trustworthy, you know.
Well, because you know these people, though.
Yeah.
You're connected to somehow.
Yeah,
you're
like,
or you're just
Joe
following
said this
them,
or whatever, you know. Yeah.
I follow the CEO of this company, and they talk about what's going on, and they share. I'm seeing, and there's a lot of trust there.
Yeah. Which, that's a whole marketing thing about how your CEO should be posting on LinkedIn.
I probably
updates
should I be
like that.
Do you post on my behalf? I don't actually get in there and do much anymore.
I don't. No.
I probably should get in there and talk some more. You probably are right.
that's a very popular thing, though.
You should talk to your boss.
Yeah, see if we can do that. Yeah. But yeah, so this is going to be wild. I'm pretty excited to see LinkedIn do a lot more. The whole fact that it's introducing these new features like the TikTok scroll feed thing and all this, and they're going out of their way to try and attract journalists and publishers for this news initiative. And I think that's a smart move too, but because they're already probably on there for other reasons.
And can we just say that the design of LinkedIn lends itself to a more professional user base?
Mm-hmm.
There's just something about the difference in design language that just makes it trustworthy because it's that business. It's always had that business focus.
And it hasn't had a massive UI change in a long time, but it's never stopped updating. It's just never had a massive overhaul like, you know, Facebook did, you know, which created an exodus of users. But we haven't had that with LinkedIn, so no one's actually like properly
and
like,
they,
upset by
they
it.
Send hey, we're still here emails. Like, they always give you aggregates of what's going on.
Yeah, their notifications are pretty great. The main one I saw, one of the main success emails that they have is the one that sends to congratulate people on being with a company for X number
of years. I love that.
Years,
I think that's
or,
such
or
a cool
like
idea.
That. Yeah, like, it brings you into there on somebody else's behalf with little guilt if you don't. It's really weird.
Yeah.
But it's very successful. High engagement on that.
It works. I click on those a lot. It's gotten me to get in there and go, oh, hey, this is going on here in LinkedIn. And so that's why I said it's over the past probably couple months for me, my source of, I'm not going to say all news, but my source of industry news has evolved because it feels like LinkedIn is really getting a lot of traction.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people who are utilizing it.
And they're about to change all their marketing analytic tools. So that's kind of sweet. This dynamic UTM thing is kind of part of that where...
You should probably see a doctor for that.
Yeah, I got a dynamic UTM. Yeah, so there's some cool stuff happening. For the most part, none of this is properly launched. The TikTok live video feed, I think, is happening now. But yeah, so pretty cool stuff overall. And LinkedIn doesn't seem to, you know, spy on me.
I was going to say, we talk about trustworthy.
Yeah.
And we talk about LinkedIn, and then you transition to, if we're going to talk about Facebook, Project we feel Instagram. Like they spy on us. And luckily, there's no proof in that.
Oh, yeah. No proof at all, except for Project Ghostbusters that analyzes competitor app traffic. Oh, no. So this is a funny name, Ghostbuster, because the main reason they started this internal secret project within Facebook is to find what's been going on with users on Snapchat. The little ghost.
Yeah.
So Project Ghostbusters intercepted encrypted traffic from Snapchat users' phones.
What?
Yeah. So it used a VPN service called Onovo? I don't know. Onovo?
I don't know.
But that collected all of its users' device traffic before it was encrypted. So it basically caught it right before it had the chance to do that. So that was how they are figuring out how you're...
How did they get it on devices?
Dude, I don't know.
Yeah. That's what we're still trying to figure out?
I guess so. It's an ongoing thing right now. It was kind of noticed a few months ago, but now we're like, oh, God, this is true. It's actually happened. So they're basically trying to figure out what, you know, who you're friends with on Snapchat, that type of thing to feed Facebook, the algorithm.
Feed the beast.
But what's funny, this is not an isolated thing. Netflix is also involved, weirdly.
What?
So there's a lawsuit against Facebook alleging anti-competitive practices. The last bit of this article is they're surprised that Facebook and Netflix were bigger competitors than anyone had previously known.
But it's probably I guess it's content consumption in general, right?
Yeah, you know, and advertising, you know, things like that. Mm. But it's strange. So there's a lawsuit against them, but apparently Facebook gave Netflix special access to user data, including private messages, in exchange for ad revenue. So horrible there, yeah. But Facebook also allegedly stopped producing its own streaming content to appease Netflix, so there was some sort of little deal there.
Yeah, but Project Ghostbusters still remains, huh?
Project Ghostbusters still remains, yes. I don't know if it's like active at the moment, but yeah.
Well, probably not now.
Yeah. The last little thing I have before we can get to some of your stuff is Google's in some big trouble. Class action settlement with California, of course. Basically, Google was called out for tracking data when you're in incognito mode.
Which we kind of talked about that this was an accusation that was happening episode or two, maybe three ago.
Yeah.
Which was really annoying because we talked about how their whole philosophy when they started in 1999 was don't be evil.
Yeah.
And here we are talking 24 years later and they're freaking evil.
This settlement is worth $5 billion and Google still denies any wrongdoing. But
yeah, you get your 40-cent check sent yeah. on your soon-to-be 73-cent stamp.
Oh, yeah. Heck yeah.
I mean, I guess what we could do is we could talk about the near-miss, like, nuclear explosion that could have happened in the security world.
Yeah, I want to hear about how two people had their keys on the nuclear launch code.
This is so close.
And they almost turned those keys.
Perhaps by now it's made some mainstream media. We're starting to see it trickle through and maybe by the time this hits your ears, you have heard about a product that you have never heard of before. It's not really even a product. It's an open source library called XZ Utils.
What a good catchy name.
XZ gonna give it to you.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe you've heard about this issue that we've had with XZ Utilities, or maybe you haven't. But if you have heard of it, you may not fully understand why was this a big deal, just knowing that it was. So let's talk a little bit about the story. So XZ Utils, before we get started, it's a library used for compressing files and things like that, libraries, things like that. If you ever used a utility called 7-Zip, mm-hmm. or I think it's LBMA, I could be wrong on that, but there's a lot of lossless compression algorithms are written in this library. And a Microsoft developer responsible for Postgres, of all things, okay. was doing some benchmarking tasks and just doing some testing using XZ Utilities and using the most recent version that was actually not even live yet. It was still sort of in the hopper. It was like a beta.
But it had gotten past a few checks at that point.
Yes. By this point, it got pushed into... So this code got pushed into the main branch,
yeah.
which is what's kind of asking a lot of questions about, is open source burnout real.
Oh, yeah.
But notice that, hey, this test should have failed, and it should have failed instantly, and then started noticing some weird behavior. So he starts digging in and doing research and finds out that there is code running that is trying to intercept SSH keys. Now, save you the boring stuff, but long and short is it's a way of being able to log in and creates a backdoor that enables you to securely connect to these Linux boxes that run this XC utilities. These compression tools are used everywhere. It's very common. It's, and in many cases, it's included in the Linux distribution. That's how sort of like built in these things are.
And this wasn't, you know, by accident. This was somebody injected
code that created this interception of the SSH keys, which are used to secure the data and provide authentication, as well as establish a backdoor or a foothold, as we may call it in other instances, to allow login into the device.
Wow, which is used in so many different places.
Yeah, so this this developer, Andres Frond, notices that XZ Utilities is acting a little wonky, notices that SSH is now on a delay, even though it should have not connected, should have been an instant failure, and starts noticing a 600 millisecond delay. A little over half a second, right?
It's pretty big when you're running.
It's a pretty big in his world, but most of us would never notice it. Starts digging in, finds this supply chain attack that was injected into the beta code that is getting ready to become considered stable. And the moment it becomes stable, it's out in the wild.
Yeah.
We talk about the severity score. This was a full-on 10-0 on a 10-point scale, 100%. Incredibly dangerous. As it sits, because some people did download this and it does
exist.
Yeah,
people are part of the beta program.
Yeah. Yep. You're going to test things out. You're going to validate. Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm going to make sure that this is working right with our systems. So there is still about a 2% sort of affected rate of the number of devices using XCUtils.
Better than 100. Glad that guy caught it.
Better than what it could have been. Yeah, this would have been incredible.
Yeah.
It really has raised a lot of question though, because some of the concept is that open source is supposed to be multiple eyes looking on code.
Yeah.
So how does this get pushed in? Like, this is now showing that there's not just burnout in businesses, but the open source movement may be experiencing burnout as well.
Which is so, that's sad.
But what do we, you know, how do you combat that? Because open source is generally free.
Yeah, like you're not paying these people to look it over and whatnot. This guy just happened
might,
to be.
Some people, you know, some people might work for organizations that support this, but there's typically, there are supposed to be maintainers that approve this code to get it. Because, right, you do your pull request, you develop your feature, whatever, and then you try to push it, and then it gets merged into the production branch. And this got approved and got set and was part of, it got merged into that main branch.
Yeah.
It's crazy how close we came. And this is just one utility. How many other places could they have been trying this?
Yeah. Or how many have been, you know, missed?
And maybe there is some successful. Yeah. What do we know?
Yeah, that's just scary. Those developers, this is what keeps them up at night.
IT people, too.
Yeah.
And so with that, I'm going to simply just say, I need a rest. And on a somber note.
Well, I mean, it's a positive note. The guy caught it. It's not going in the wild.
But it was 100% accidental.
Yeah.
This guy is not a security researcher. He is just a developer trying to test the tools with the next version.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden he's like, why is this version taking so much longer than that? Why is there a performance issue?
Yeah, good thing you inspected the code.
And then
he
starts analyzing the processes and notices all this and then finds this code that's added to the main.
Hope he's getting a Microsoft bonus.
Man, that could have been awful.
Yeah.
Gets pushed out to like Azure and AWS and Fedora and all the major Linux branches would adopt it. Would have been awful.
Yeah.
This is a big one. This, like, it's weird to say it, but in that respect, the world kind of owes this guy tripping over this.
Yeah.
And there's some good memes about it.
Really?
Yeah, about, like, how this was found. And it's just a guy playing basketball, and he, like, walks, and all of a sudden the ball jumps the one way. And so he's, like, trying to test the and finds that there's obviously something under the floor because the ball won't bounce as high in this one area.
Oh, wow.
It's a great meme.
Yeah, to explain.
But it was just, like, how this was found. And it's just, like, he was just walking, and then all of a sudden it's, like,
just
that's noticed weird.
Something odd, yeah.
And, I mean, I guess it does lay credence to that wonderful Homeland Security saying, if you see something, say something, kind of like, you see something, don't just assume that it's a one-off, you know, we have to investigate.
Wow.
I think that covers us, though, for another couple of weeks there. There's a lot in there. I'm excited to see how HubSpot turns out.
Yeah, man. If that acquisition happens,
it's going to be big.
That's going to be huge.
Yeah. And put, oddly, some huge leverage to HubSpot. I think HubSpot was originally invested.
Yeah, Google was investing.
Google was an early investor in them.
Will Google put it into the ground now? They've done it before, but this is the biggest acquisition they've ever made. So.
Or will you have unique advantages for things like ad control and things like that? Those things that Google tends to always mess. You're going to see some really tight integrations and analytics that you wouldn't be able to get on any other platform.
Yeah, true.
Be interesting. Well, hey, that does it for another episode of the Lighthouse IT Solutions Podcast. If you're curious, you want to see some show notes on everything that we talked about today, check us out. You can go to lighthousesol.com/podcast, or you can go to the hub at hub.lighthousesol.com. If you're a client, you can log into the hub, check out all kinds of great information and resources that are available to you, including some knowledge base articles, various solutions, all kinds of great pieces and parts, as well as the blog is sitting there these days too. Yeah, so on behalf of Griff, I've been Matt, and this has been the Lighthouse IT Solutions Podcast. Catch you out later.